heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode of the Locked On Pacers podcast. This week, me and Adam talk about a lot of things, including what we think the over-under on the combined wins for the Pacers and Colts will be, the official end of the tampering case, the Pacers' two new signings for training camp, as well as closing out with some interesting arguments about the new draft lottery reform system. As always, the presenting sponsor of this week's episode is SeatGeek. Use the code LONBA at checkout with SeatGeek for $20 off your first purchase. As always, it was Tony and Adam this week, and we hope you enjoy the episode.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On the other line today, I've got Adam Friedman. Adam, what's up?
Oh, not much. Just sitting in this wonderful studio on a Sunday afternoon before the Colts are probably going to get their butts whipped this afternoon. But, you know, I know it's not a Colts podcast, so we won't spend too much time on them. But just enjoying myself might, right now. How are you?
Yeah, we might get to them later. We'll see. So, Adam, tampering's finally over.
Yes, it should finally be over. The Paul George just discussion should finally have ended. There'll be, you know, one more week of talk on the week he comes to play here, maybe when they play him again in Oklahoma City. But besides that, we should be – Paul George should be out of the Pacer dialogue, hopefully forever, basically. Hopefully forever. You know, Herb Simon released that statement, basically said he was happy with the trade. It seemed kind of a weird statement. Like, why would he have to announce that he's happy with the trade? He made the trade. But he dispelled the rumor that he was going to sue the league for tampering, whatever. So it's all over, and we can move on.
Yeah, it's very exciting that it's over. I was never a fan of the whole tampering thing to begin with. And at least now when it's talked about, it'll be separate stories. Like the Paul George to LA story will be a Thunder story and the tampering story will be a Pacers story, which I'm glad that Paul George's talk of the Pacers is over.
Yeah, I'm hoping the only time I see a Paul George story in some kind of Indiana Pacers-related publication is when they play each other, when he
December
plays
13th,
against the Pacers.
Time.
Only time.
Last time, exactly. Yeah, it's. I think it's really good. I never listened to the Low Post until after we did our podcast last week, but it was interesting when he said that the Pacers now cannot tamper themselves and have to actually wait till July 1st to talk to free agents, because if not, someone's going to file a charge against them. Thought that was pretty funny. So maybe the tampering charge is never actually over, but at least the Paul George aspect is.
Yeah, I listened to that podcast too, but I guess I didn't kind of make that connection. Like, oh yeah, they can't tamper because now they were the ones to rat somebody out. Every team's gonna want to rat them out. Kind of like, why be the snake, sort of.
That's why I've been beating the dead horse with the petty thing. Like, it's just such a bad look to me. And now we have to deal with it ourselves for so many weeks. Like a year or two, but like you said, I'm just so glad it's over.
Yeah, can we real quick? I know you sent me a DM over Twitter the other week about somebody sent you a DM that Paul George technically, because they traded him before the free agent period, they could re-sign him next year in July. We want to just discuss that for like half a second.
Yeah. We have to give him a shout out, obviously. Jake Whitaker, the editor of Bullets Forever, sent me this DM with his Paul George conspiracy theory. So the background here is that the rule in the NBA is if you trade away a player, you cannot reacquire that player within the same calendar NBA season. And since the Paul George trade happened before July 1st, that means technically the Pacers could re-sign him next summer, or excuse me, could reacquire him this calendar season after July 29th with no ramifications.
June 29th.
Yeah,
that's never going to happen, but I thought it was funny. I just kind of laughed at it. I'm like, you know, maybe they're playing four-dimensional chess somehow, but I doubt they are.
Then they filed the tampering charge so the Lakers couldn't get him, and they were the only team that could get him. It all makes sense.
Yeah, and you got to think if they do sign him, there's going to be somebody in the league thinking, did they trade him? Do they could re-sign him? That's tampering somewhere. Like, it would be even a bigger deal. You'd think the Pacers would try to just stay under the radar then if that was their overall plan. So I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, unless the Pacers win like 45 games this year, and then Paul wants to come back because he thinks he can win a championship with them. But I think I think he's gone. I mean, that was
the plan to get Paul George help. Trade away Paul George for the help, get a great draft pick, and then re-sign Paul George. That's it.
Yeah, you see it in baseball. I think that's the only time I can think of right now is the Rolls Chapman trade, where a team will trade a guy at the trade deadline, get some picks back, and then he'll re-sign. But like, that's not really tampering, because it'd be like a free agent type of thing. Like, I remember when John Lester was a free agent, or was going to be a free agent the next year with Boston. They trade him, but there's at the trade deadline, everybody knew, oh, he could still re-sign with Boston in the offseason because, you know, he'll get it. The A's will get what they want out of him for the 3 months, and then he'll come back and maybe sign a huge contract. He didn't, but Chapman did that with the Yankees.
Right, and I think the Cubs kind of knew that he was going to leave. They were just like, screw it, let's get this great guy to win the World Series, and they did. So
yeah, it worked out for both teams in that situation.
So maybe it can work out for the Pacers and the Thunder. Who knows? I doubt it. But it was a really interesting theory, and it's technically right that they have the option to reacquire him before if they had traded him to the Celtics and waited like everyone wanted them to, then they would not have had this option to re-sign him until the 1 year after the trade. So an interesting conspiracy theory from Jake. I'll be sure to let him know when this podcast comes out. I don't think it's funny.
Yeah, Kevin Pritchard's playing that four-dimensional chess. He's just playing a different game than anybody else.
He is playing a different game than everybody else. And speaking of a different game than basketball, the Colts play today, and we will relate this back to the Pacers in a moment, because the Miller Time podcast, one of our other favorite Pacers podcasts, tweeted a funny thing that I want to discuss with you, Adam. They said, over under 41.5 wins for the Pacers and Colts combined this season. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm going to break some news from Colts fans. They're listening on Monday, so it won't matter. But apparently Andrew Luck might be out till October. So that means he's probably going to miss 4 to 5 games. They're not winning any of those games. Maybe they beat the Browns. But so I have the Colts winning like 8. It's between 7 and 9 games in my mind. So let's take the low end 7. I have the Pacers winning 28-32. So even if you take the high end above those 9 and 32, you only get 41. So I think it's under, and I think it's under by a lot probably.
I agree. I tweeted back at them and said I would consider taking the under at 31.5. It's going to be pretty close. It's like, if the Pacers go 25 and the Colts go 6, which, like, those will both be disappointing seasons, but not totally unreasonable. I mean, that's under 31.5, and that's really scary.
Yeah. It's not going to be a great year to be an Indiana sports fan. I'm a diehard, you know, Colts and Pacers fans. I can admit that. I try to be a little unbiased talking about them, but not a great fan to be out there, one of those fans. But again, if you listen to this podcast, I promise on the Pacers pod, this Locked On Pacers podcast will be really fun. So don't abandon us, even if the Pacers start to stink.
And I know you listening know the result of the Colts game, so maybe we'll look foolish for saying that they have no chance of getting to 41.5 if the Colts look awesome against the Rams.
I hope I'm reverse jinxing them big time. I hope I say the Colts win 6 games, the Pacers win 25, like you said, and they end up both winning like 40-10. I'd be awesome at that.
I think the hardest line for me would be the Colts 7 and the Pacers 29. So I'll say 36.5 would be the hardest for me to pick. Or 35.5 would be the hardest for me to pick, over or under.
Yeah, that seems about right. I mean, like I said, 30, around 30 seems like a Pacers number, and around 6 is the Colts. So,
yeah, that'll be really interesting. But we are a Pacers podcast, so we have to discuss the Pacers. We have some news. We finally have some news that's not just speculation on what's going to happen this season. The Pacers brought in 2 new guys for training camp this week. They both have the same last name. They brought in DeQuan and Trey McKinney-Jones. I tweeted the Pacers are going to have a training camp battle to determine the next Indiana Jones, so hope you think that's funny. But what do you think? Do you know anything about these guys, Adam?
I know very limited. I read, who was it, Ben Gibson's article in 8.9 Seconds. I obviously follow you on Twitter. Recommend anybody out there to go follow Tony at TEastNBA. Very, very funny follow. We have, I sometimes respond to his tweets just because I'm kind of I can't cuss to be like an a-hole, but anyways. So, yeah, I saw your tweet. I read a little bit about them. You know, the odds are, right, neither of them are going to play on the Pacers roster. They maybe could both end up with the Mad Ants. But the odds are that since they brought in these two guys, it looks more towards Wilkins, right? So because they brought in 2 guys who are, like, probably not going to make the team, Wilkins probably will at this point.
Yeah, so we were talking about that off the air before. So they have 13 guaranteed contracts and 2 two-ways. So they have 2 more roster spots available and 5 more training camp slots. Now they filled 4 of the training camp slots. So we know one of those four guys is going to make the team between Damian Wilkins, Ben Moore, and the two Joneses. And I don't really know enough about the young three guys to say if they have a chance, but you got to think it's going to be Wilkins just for his veteran presence, right?
Yeah, I think we talked about this before. I think Wilkins just makes sense because they're a really young team. I mean, right, Collison and Young are – and Jefferson, that's like their three oldest players. And there's a chance Young gets traded. And Collison's like only like 29. And Jefferson kind of is the one kind of veteran presence they have. So you think they're going to – they want another one in the locker room because they're going to have a ton of young players. And you got to have somebody there to check Lance a little bit because as great as Lance is not the best like role model and, you know, locker room guy.
Yeah, agreed. You just need someone to kind of keep everyone together as a glue guy. I know the Spurs had Joel Anthony on their team last year. I think he played like under 20 minutes during the season, but he was just kind of a glue guy who's been in the league for a really long time. And another thing, we texted about this week too, is I wrote about the garbage time lineup the Pacers might use just because I was interested and it kind of matters because they might have a lot of garbage time minutes. And I didn't know who'd play garbage time at the two right now because Lance Stephenson is probably the guy, but he's – too good for that, and if he gets injured, that's not very good. So if you bring in Wilkins, he's your new garbage time too, and that actually does kind of matter with this team.
That's got to be hard for you to say. He's kind of too good to play garbage time. You're not the biggest Lance fan, as if listener of this podcast know. But no, I agree with you. We were talking about it, and it's hard. Like you just assume Wilkins is going to play, but we weren't sure Wilkins is going to make the roster. I guess right now, it seems like he might, based on who they signed, because they basically have. They're too deep at every position, and they have a backup point guard, and then they have a backup including the rookies, a backup center, right? Backup power forward, point guard, and center, and Joe Young, TJ Leaf, and in a bogey, I probably butchered that name. But, yeah, so Wilkins would probably end up being the guy that's going to end up playing the two if he makes the roster because they're not going to want to play Lance in that kind of minutes because Lance either thinks he's too good for it or he is. So,
yeah, well, you're not going to play Wilkins during the rotation, so he's just there to make sure no one gets hurt if they're getting absolutely clobbered at the end of a game, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know why else you'd play him ever. And I think it's kind of to morph him into a coaching role eventually so he can kind of see the guys on the team that are young, and that's not the worst thing ever. And until we see the last signing, you know, we could just be guessing, like, if they get Shabazz Muhammad or Tony Allen, then they're not going to keep Damian Wilkins. But if they just sign another guy you've never heard of like these two, then – they might keep him around, but we got to talk some background on these guys. I think they both have ties to the Pacers, Ben said. Daquan played with the Pacers Summer League team in 2014. I don't really know if he's ever had actually NBA time. And McKinney Jones played with the Mad Ants last season and had like 15 points a game or something.
Yeah.
So he actually has shown he can score, but I don't think he's good enough for the NBA just because he never played there. But we'll have to see. You know, maybe they could actually make the team considering who else they're competing with.
Yeah, I mean, this Pacers team is one of the bottom 10 teams in the league, which means the back of the roster is like some of the bottom 50 players in the league. So, you know, we're talking like there are 450 players in the league. We're talking about guys that are like at the 449, 450 spots in of like NBA players. So, you know, they're probably less than that because they're not going to make the team. So, you know,
kind of fit that mold to me with like Joe Young and EK and like. Just take a flyer on the guy. Maybe they turn out to be good because they've shown they have the chance to be. And if they're not, who cares? Like, your season's not that important anyway, right?
Yeah, no, I'm perfectly okay with them taking flyers on guys like this because you just never know. I mean, there occasionally is that one guy that nobody thought that's been muddling around in the D League. Now it's called the G League, but kind of been muddying around there. All of a sudden, he kind of pops one season and becomes kind of an average role player. I mean, Jordan Clarkson kind of became that. I don't think Jordan Clarkson was a second-round pick.
Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah, Hassan Whiteside, another great example. Guys that were just like had the talent, then didn't pan out, went to D League, got kind of going, got signed by a team, and now they're like, you know, decent role players on a team that could be a legitimate NBA player who could play minutes in important games.
Exactly. And I think these guys are both wings too, which is the hardest position to get, so might as well take a shot at them. So I'm okay with it. That's pretty exciting. They finally did something. They have one roster spot to go for training camp, so we'll have to see who it is. And we actually missed some news a couple weeks ago that they signed their last two-way contract to the Kentucky grad Alex Poitras. Remember him?
Yes. Thought it was – we were talking about it, and you mixed him up with Archie Goodwin, another Kentucky guy. There's so many of them. I don't blame you. There's so many Kentucky guys.
Archie Goodwin did just get signed by the Blazers this week. I wanted the Pacers to snatch him up. But, yeah, Poitras, the second two-way guy, remember he was really highly recruited and thought he'd be good, and then he stayed for 4 years.
He never really got a shot until last year. He played with the Sixers and actually averaged 10 points a game in his six games. But we'll have to see how much time he actually gets with the Pacers. It sounds like he'll be with the Mad Ants more. Well, he actually will be for sure because he's a two-way guy. So we'll have to see.
Isn't that part of that 10 points, though, the fact that he played for the Sixers who, you know, somebody has to score kind of thing?
Well, you got a 10-day contract, and they just use those guys to play a ton of minutes just to see how good they can be. So, yeah, he played 26 minutes a game and averaged 10 points, which isn't great.
Yeah, I mean, because somebody has to score for, you know, you can't just score 0 points in an NBA.
So yeah, his offensive rating was really good, 115, and his defensive rating was really terrible, so at 112. We'll have to see.
I didn't realize this, but Poyser was a four-year Kentucky guy, so I didn't realize how old he was. I thought he was one of those one-and-done Kentucky guys. That seemed like all they have there in Kentucky. I didn't realize that he was a four-year guy. So, you know, he actually might – he's what, now 23, 24. He's a little bit older, more like Joe Young's age, so –
Yeah, I think he turned 24 on September 6th.
So this might be kind of his last chance. So, I mean, like, I was thinking he was, like, maybe 21, which makes it a little bit better. So, you know, this is probably his last chance to really get a shot. He doesn't prove himself this season. He might be out of the league, be playing in Europe.
Yeah, he's kind of a 3-4 mix guy. More, I don't know, maybe a 4-5 mix in the modern NBA. I don't really know how to describe him. He's an all right kind of at everything guy. I wouldn't say he's bad on offense or defense or good at either, but – that's kind of the guy you want for your two-way, right? Someone you can just plug in if there's an injury or something. So,
right. Poitras was not on that Kentucky team that Indiana played, right? That one season. That's I'm blamed for a fan of their thing. I think it was.
That would have been his freshman year.
Yeah, I don't think
he was.
But another one. Poitras is another one of those Kentucky guys. So there, I'm sure he has a lot of talent because all of those guys end up doing. But yeah. like you said earlier, he's going to be a. Between the Mad Ants and the Pacers. And, you know, I mean, like, a guy like King Christmas did that last year, too, and he proved himself and got some minutes because he was better than on Jefferson, basically. So,
and good for King Christmas. He just got $1 million overseas, so maybe that can happen to Poitras, too. Yeah.
No, Christmas, I go to Syracuse, so I like Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
Connection. But, I mean, you know, like we said, Poitras, you said, is kind of dynamic, and they don't really have – I mean, like, the backup power forward is Sabonis right now, but they've got a bunch of rookies, and the backup center's up for grabs, and the backup small forward, the third-string small forward is kind of up for grabs. So, you know, he could get one of those spots maybe.
Right, and if someone gets hurt, again, that's what the two-way's kind of for, just plug and chug.
Yeah, so he might get – we might if you're a Pacers fan, you might see him a little bit because, you know, somebody's bound to get hurt. I don't imagine – when Robson got hurt a little bit last year, he could fill in for him at the backup – small forward, that kind of thing. So,
or Al Jefferson, since he's 30 and will probably get hurt, 31.
Oh, Jefferson might not make it more than 5 games without getting hurt, or he might not play.
Yeah, exactly. So the only guy we have left to talk about at the end of the roster is Ben Moore. I didn't know much about him until I wrote about his salary piece this week. I'll talk more about that later. But Kevin O'Connor at The Ringer actually put him as one of his favorite like sleepers for the second round, which I thought was really interesting. And apparently he's a really high motor guy. He had a pretty good summer league for the Pacers, and now he's got a chance to make the team, so we'll have to see how he does. He looks like a pretty high energy also four, but he plays like with much more effort on defense. He's much better on that end than most guys his age. So we'll have to see. I kind of hope Ben Moore gets one of those last two roster spots personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be about competition, right? You're bringing all these kind of younger guys that have some size and, like, you know, you bring in 6'8", a lot of 6'8" guys, you get some competition going for – basically that 12th roster, like that really 12th minute playing spot, because we don't really know who's going to be that. We know kind of the 11 players kind of locked in minutes wise, and then we don't, or at least, like, you know, with the two draft picks this year, where they're going to be, we don't know who's going to be kind of that 12th guy that's going to be the third string for and plugs in everywhere. So, you know, if Kevin O'Connor, I trust his opinion on a lot of things, so we'll see.
Yeah, it was a good gift thread. You should check out that article if you get a chance, but maybe Ben Moore makes it, maybe he doesn't. I kind of hope he does after reading that for some reason. When someone smarter than me says someone should make the team, I trust them.
So if you had to pick one now, who of all the two-way guys and say we got Wilkins, who's kind of the next guy? Pacers take.
We still have that one spot left, so it's impossible to say. But given who we have right now, I'd pick Wilkins and Moore for sure. I don't know enough about these Jones guys to say they deserve to make the team.
Okay. I want to see what Poitras is like. Just because.
Well, he made the team for sure. He's on a two-way already.
Oh yeah, I meant like, Poitras probably right. In the way the two-way works, he could also spend most of the year with the Mad Ants, right?
Yeah. So he's 45 days in the NBA, which means they'll just call him up on 45 game days, basically.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking like maybe not who wins. Sorry, maybe not who actually wins the roster, but who's going to play more. So of like Poitras, both Joneses, Wilkins, Moore, who's kind of the one? I mean, Wilkins, let's say, because he's the veteran, is going to be with the roster more, but who's going to play more at the end of the year?
Ooh, man. Out of that group, I would probably say Ben Moore, because he's the high energy guy. And if you want to give your starting guys and your rotation guys more rest, a high energy guy is the perfect guy. He comes in and doesn't do anything wrong, and he tries really hard, and he makes at least okay plays. You know, maybe that's the guy you want to plug in for a rotation player on the team. So maybe it'll be more.
Yeah, the two-way deals of all just are gonna definitely are a wrinkle in this season that we're interesting to watch throughout the season. So actually, speaking of watching the Pacers this season, you know, commercial break real quick. The presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast is SeatGeek. So if you want to watch some of those Pacers players this year, you should use SeatGeek to buy tickets to watch them. So SeatGeek is a great site. I've used it before. I don't think Tony's used it yet, but he's going to use it when the Pacers season starts, I'm sure. He's going to go to a lot of games because he's a – that's going to Pacers games. How many games are you going to go to this year, Tony?
Oh, man, 20, 25, as many as I can.
Yeah, so when you use SeatGeek, like I've been telling all the listeners for the past few weeks, remember, just when you go on the site, it tells you – the ticket plus fee price, so there's no surprise cost. You know the price you're paying immediately. And it's got a great – it rates the value of the ticket, so it tells you if you're getting a good deal or not. You don't want to pick a seat that has a red dot. You want to get green. You can take yellow because it's at least some deal, but don't pick any seats that have red in them. And if you use the promo code LOMBA, I think you get a $20 discount off your tickets. If you use the promo code LOMBA, that's because you're listening to Locked On Pacers podcast. As our wonderful listeners, you can use that promo code. So remember, use the promo code LOMBA when you buy any Pacer tickets, or if you go to any other game, maybe go to Colts game, maybe go to concert, whatever. You can use the promo code LOMBA to get a discount on your tickets. And now that is the end of the ad, and we're going to go back to the podcast.
Okay, so the next thing we have to talk about Pacers-wise is the lottery reform debate.
Yes, I'm excited for this. Yeah, we had a fight on Twitter. It was really funny.
Yes, me and Adam have gone back and forth on this already. So if you have not heard, Woj reported this week that the NBA is considering doing lottery reform and flattening out the odds so the top team has a less chance of getting the first pick and the worst team in the lottery has a better chance of getting the first pick. And by first, I mean top three. Sorry about that. The competition committee has to review the proposals and make any edits they can, so we don't really know anything about it yet. It's pretty interesting that it's coming at a time when the Pacers are finally going to be bad for the first time in decades. They haven't picked inside the top 10 since the 90s. So that kind of sucks. But Adam, what are your thoughts on this reform? I know you like it, don't you?
I don't think there's any great system, right? So with the getting the first pick, there's no good system out there. It's a bunch of bad ones. Do you take the worst record gets the first pick? That's what the NFL does. You know, you can do that. You can do what the NBA and NHL do, which has some kind of lottery, the top three, maybe top five, whatever you decide. So the way the thing we're doing is basically flattening out the odds. I heard a good theory on the Woj pod with Zach Lowe, which if you're listening to that yet, you should listen to it. It's a great podcast, that one.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Best in the biz in the NBA. But so they had the idea, well, what if you expand to five teams to win the lottery? Then that kind of loot, that kind of makes tanking a little bit less beneficial because you can have the sixth pick, which is the difference between like six and three. I think they were explaining one year it'd be like the difference between having Towns at number one or like Jan Veasley, I think is what they said, something like that.
Hezonja versus Porzingis.
Yeah, so I mean that's what that means. I just think the way the system is now, where you give so much advantage, even just you're not giving 100%, but you give such a high advantage getting one of the top three picks, incentivizes teams to start the season just not trying. I'm okay if by the 60 game point a team's like, oh, we're not going to win, so we should just start losing games. I'm okay with that. But right now, what you're getting, at least last season, you got like three teams. The Lakers are one, the Sixers were another, Brooklyn kind of, I guess. You know, they didn't own their pick, but those two for sure. Suns, I think the Suns are one of them. The one of the season, they're like, we don't care about winning. We just want to. We're not even going to play like good talented young. We're not going to play young players. We're just going to play bad players. We're going to sign eight rookies and no seven won't play in the league in a couple of years, but we're going to sign them anyways. We're not going to bring in any veterans. So we're not going to try to have any sense of trying to win. We're going to win 20 games to try to get the first pick, which it's bad for basketball. It makes bad basketball. Like, I don't want to watch a game where the Pacers play the Sixers. I never wanted to watch those games. You know what I mean? Because the Pacers, even though the Pacers weren't great, they were so much better than the Sixers. It was just not fun to watch. And so I think it kind of hurt this league the way the Sixers were tanking, I think there's been a message sent to the league that, hey, if you do what the Sixers did, we're going to come down on you, kind of like, you know, how they fired Sam Hinkie. But still, I don't know what the best system is. I think it might be almost a system where it's almost – where it's kind of reverse odds, where, like, if you're one of those teams that misses the playoffs just barely, you have a decent chance of getting picked, so it incentivizes teams to try to get towards the eight seeds. Because right now there is no incentive to be the eight seed in any conference. It's basically the incentive to lose in a four games with the Warriors or Cavs. So that's kind of how I think. I know you disagree with me. You like the win percentage one, right?
I think it, like, they discussed my thoughts pretty well in that there needs to be some form of change, because the only way for small market teams to get stars without being really good is the draft, right? So that's the reason that tanking happens, is because of that exact reason. But then Zach Lowe brought up a great point of, like, if you change it, there's going to be ripple effects somewhere else, right? Like, a team's going to tank out of the eight seed now instead because the odds are so much higher, or, like, you know, just general things that happen differently because everything's connected in the NBA. It's not just like everything's its own thing. You kind of have to think of it like that. Like, you're just kind of moving the tanking, which is, I don't like. I think you should always try to make the playoffs if you're close instead of tanking out, you know?
Yeah, you hit it perfectly. Just like everything in life, everything's connected. I mean, they were talking about it, for example, like, so whatever they do with the rules, because it's the way the NBA is set up with the restricted free agency on rookie contracts and the way you can hold rookies, it's really, really valuable to get a good rookie. I mean, they make so little that a really good NBA player, like a max level player, can make, that it's worth it. You get 7 years of a really talented player. So there was a theory out there that you could make it only hold a player for 2 years and then it's not restricted free agency. But then that hurts the small market teams, because, like, what you saw with Kyrie is these players now can dictate where they want to go, and nobody wants to go play in a small market. You know, then you're going to see all the players on the coast, basically, and it's going to be, you know, not going to be any good small market team, which are kind of fun for the league when there's good, you know, Memphis is good, when the Pacers are good, the Jazz are good. That's fun for the league. So I think the best way, in my opinion, would be just to make the odds at, like, the 14, 13, and 12 higher, because I'm not sure teams can just tank their way out of the eight seed. Like, I don't agree with that idea, because what do you – at that point, somebody's got to get it, and maybe you incentivize teams that are, like, the 8 or 9 right now to try to win games, so then you get a little more competitive basketball. Plus, you could probably incentivize it a little bit better by more money. You know, a certain kind of bonus for making the playoffs could also do that. So there are ways, but like you said, it's going to have ripple effects no matter what, so –
Well, it's funny. They kind of addressed, like, all the bullet points me and you had talked about before this podcast on Woj and Lowe. Like, they said so many things that I was like, oh, that's so interesting. You know, like, okay, if you don't want people to tank out of the eight seed, then go back to making the first round a five-game series so that those teams have a better chance in the first round. And then, you know, if you don't want it to be tanking out of the eight seed, maybe make it so the lottery is, like, every team that doesn't get a top four seed. So, like, maybe you tank out of a top four seed, but who cares at that point? You're already a really good team. And I actually really liked that idea. So there's a lot of, like, good ways to get around it since all these things mix together, but there's no, like, perfect solution because it's just moving where the tanking occurs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I'm just going to draw an analogy that it might be weird, a little political, but it's not political. So it's like the tax law in America, kind of. So when they're talking about tax reform, so I'm not gonna be political with this, but, like, when you do something like that, you change the tax law, you all of a sudden create all these new loopholes. So, like, when they did it in, like, 1993, everybody was praising it, right? And then all of a sudden there's all these new loopholes, and then, you know, 10 years down the road, you're like, well, this is a flaw. So they're gonna fix the tax law again this year, maybe. But then there'll be more flaws, they'll come off, and there'll be more loopholes. So it's just like when you change something that big in the league, it has its ups and downsides, and eventually there'll be more flaws with it, and people want to change it again in 5 years. So I don't know if you can – if you keep it the way it is, it probably can sustain. I don't know if you like it necessarily if it stays where it is, but you can at least, you know, it's sustainable because the league has done this system and it's been thriving just fine, and there's been enough small market teams to win. Like, San Antonio's won a bunch of championships. Cavs got one. I mean, there are enough small market wins out there to make up for it, but it just depends – it depends what they change it to, because if they do a really dramatic change, a lot's going to change in the league.
Yeah, and you kind of hit the nail on the head when you were debating me on Twitter with the biggest general problem is obvious, right? And I agree with you on this. Like, you cannot have what the Sixers did happening again. Like, that was so bad for the league to have a team literally win 15 games or less 4 seasons in a row on purpose. Like, that looks awful. And then that ties into what Zach and Woj were talking about, is, like, with the Heat this year, when they were 10-31 and then they had the crazy good second half of the season, everyone's like, what are they doing? Why are they trying? Like, you should not have a league where people are saying, why is a team trying? You know, like, that shouldn't be how it works. I totally agree with that part of the tanking thing. But to me, you kind of have to have the draft be the way it is, because you can't just have these bad teams be stuck being bad. I think that's even worse for the league than tanking.
Yeah, you hit the point too there with the Heat. I mean, like, the Heat had the great run, and then there was no incentive for them to be the 14th best team in the league. The 14th worst team in the league. Which kind of stinks, because, like, if the Heat got a top pick, they might be a good team this year. It'd be fun to watch. Like, if they had gotten one of those top three picks, why am I blanking on who got drafted this year? If they had gotten Jason Tatum, maybe, that would have been kind of cool, right? Like, that would have been cool to watch. But then, you know, like, they also hit on the head, if you do that, then draft picks value. So if draft picks get traded all the time, then their value gets all screwed up, because then you have to protect 10 to 14 and you don't want to protect 5 to 10. I don't, you know what I mean? It screws up that kind of thing. So it's a mess. And I think the only way you can really do it is by minor, without dramatically changing the league, is just to minor tweak what you have now. You know,
yeah, the minor percentage changes. Like that. Just minorly tweak the percentages. I also like this idea. I saw Bill Simmons tweet it, and then I heard it a bunch of places, so I don't actually know who created this idea. But the idea is that you don't pick in the top three 2 years in a row. It's impossible, right? So the example was always the Timberwolves. So the Timberwolves pick Towns, and then they suck again the next year. Then the best pick they can get is 4.
Okay. But, like, doesn't that mess up, the lottery? Like the Timberwolves, I mean, like, I'm just thinking, like, the Cavs, who won the lottery like 3 times. One time they won it out of the 9 spot, but they won the lottery. So how does that affect that? And then you can't, like, a team like the Thunder can't build what they built because they don't have 2 top 3 picks in a row.
Yeah, like Derrick Rose was like, wasn't he like the Bulls got the 10th lottery odds or something when they got D Rose or something?
Yeah, I mean, was Kyrie the one who was? It was the first pick that year that the Cavs won.
No, they were really bad that year. Maybe it was Kyrie, or was it Anthony Bennett the year they got? Yeah.
I can't remember which one. It was one of those two guys.
Yeah.
No, I think it was the Wiggins year, actually. No, I think it was the Wiggins year, and they used that pick to trade for Love. So that changed the whole league in, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah, I don't – well, I do think it sucks that, like, the league can change based on the ping pong balls, but I don't know what the better system is. I don't think the way that they have described it now is better than what we currently have, just because I don't want teams to tank out of the playoffs.
Yeah, and, you know, I know on Twitter you said that you like the worst – this the worst team is the best pick, but I think that doesn't really fit. Like, the lottery at least somewhat incentivizes you to try to win, because you don't have a great chance of getting a pick. Like, you don't have a 100% chance. If you know for sure if you're bad, you're going to get a top three pick, then teams will – there are going to be 3 teams every year are going to say, screw this, I'm not going to try. We're going to win 10 games and get the first top three pick and get one of those great players, where the lottery at least kind of adds a little bit of spice to that. Because, like, if you're in the 10th spot, you have some incentive to, like, hey, we can either bottom out or get the playoffs, because, like, we're not getting the top three pick at the 10th spot probably. So maybe you make the odds even less. Maybe you only make lottery chances for the top 8 teams or worse. I don't know how you do it. That still makes a lot of
sense. I like that idea, kind of.
Yeah, every solution I think of creates more problems. So it's a hard subject to figure out the issue too. And if there was a perfect system, somebody would have it already.
Yeah, and another big overarching point of all this that Zach brought up was – the whole reason teams do this is because it's so hard to get stars any other way. So maybe instead of doing lottery reform, change something else that makes it easier for these teams to get stars, like rollover cap space or something like that, which was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, this ties back into the designated player extension. Like when you finally get one of those goodbyes, like the Pacers, for example, did exactly what the NBA wanted. They never bottomed out. They never tried to tank. They were mediocre, and they got the 10th pick and got Paul George. But because of some weird flaw because he wasn't like to one of the 3 All-NBA teams versus, like, we know he's a top 15 player in the league, the Pacers couldn't re-sign him. Because I'm sorry about Paul George again. I know we said we stopped talking about it, but I'm convinced he would re-sign if the Pacers could have offered him $212 million. I think he would have.
I'm convinced he could, because he stayed on the team after the trade deadline, and they would have traded him if he wouldn't have stayed for that money.
That's why they didn't trade him at the trade deadline, honestly, is because they thought they could sign him that $200 million contract, and he was going to take it. For the All-NBA spot, and it's because he wanted that money. It's a lot of money to make.
Right, and now the only other way to get a star is the draft, which is why they like the lottery how it is now.
Yeah.
Because the Pacers have long been the exception to the rule, because they got, like, Danny Granger outside the top 10, Kawhi Leonard outside the top 10, Paul George outside the top 10, Miles Leonard outside the top 10. Like, they just have gotten so, like, I hate, it's so weird to say the Pacers have gotten lucky in the draft, but they have, they really have for a long time. So they've been like the, one of the very few exceptions to the rules to the whole reason the lottery exists.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about, we might not like the way Larry Bird ended his tenure with the Pacers, but like he's hit on a lot of draft picks. I mean, like, no, and these are like mid draft picks. They aren't top five picks. This guy, Larry Bird, has picked 10 to 17 and he's hit on four or five legitimate star NBA players, which is hard to do.
And he hits on second rounders, which is hard to do too.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it just, it's annoying because like if the Pacers had just bottomed out after like they lost O'Neal and they lost Artest, they maybe could be where like, I mean, they could have, they could be like the Wizards now, right? They could have gotten Wall at some point, maybe gotten Beal, but they chose to try to win and they were kind of good for a while because they just didn't go the full way and they were exciting for a little bit, but there was no incentive in the league for them to do that. It's just because their owner didn't want to lose that much money.
And you can say with the Pacers that like, they accomplished their goal, right? They made it to two conference finals. They did it. They got the star and they made it to the finals. So now they have to restart the cycle of going to the bottom and getting these stars again. But that's just, it shouldn't be a cycle, you know?
Yeah. No, like, go ahead.
There should be legitimate team building strategy. Like, I get that the league is cyclical now. Like, okay, you were really good and then you bottom out and then you build back up and then you get good. But there's like, there should be team building strategy to being good, and there's few exceptions to the rules, like the Hawks and Warriors and the Spurs are always good, and the Magic and the Suns are always bad, you know. But like, it's usually a cycle, and it shouldn't be a cycle. Like, if you have a good GM who can make your team good faster, like Danny Ainge just did, that should be an advantage. And the draft kind of doesn't allow that sometimes with the lottery.
Yeah, I think the Celtics are a bad example because just they fleece the Nets. But like, if you look at the last 20 years of the NBA, right? The Spurs are one of the best teams. They got their top pick because they tanked, kind of, to get Duncan. I mean, the Cavs clearly tanked to get LeBron. LeBron is a complete – only where he is in Cleveland is because they tanked. Kyrie's that way. I mean, I'm thinking of teams that have won, right? I mean, the Mavs, I guess, didn't tank to get Nowitzki, but he was not – he was, a number eight, number nine pick. I mean, the Heat, with the first time of Wade, they tanked to get Wade. So, I mean, there's just all these teams out there that have tanked to get good picks. And right. That's how they win. And there's very few exceptions of teams that just don't fully bottom out that aren't like L.A., basically because they can sign a guy, any guys they want, because they're that big of a brand that can win championships.
Yeah, and I don't know what the solution is, really. Because I think – I just hate the risk of smoothing and then, like, you're the Heat this year, right? And you get to your last game, and it's like, okay, if we win, we're the 8th seed, or we lose and we have, like, a 10% chance at a top 3 pick, yeah, we're going to lose because we're just going to get killed by the Cavs in the first round anyway. So I don't like the idea of that being the solution.
Yeah, I think we've come to this, the idea that there's like I was saying this on Twitter. When you said respond to my tweet, I was like, this topic is too big to talk about 140 characters at a time. There's just so many issues with it. But like you were saying from even the start, you do one thing and it creates a whole other issue. It's there's no perfect system, and I don't. You know, the league will do something, and then we can talk about that. But for now, I don't think there's no way to design a good system. It's the best of a bunch of bad systems.
Yeah, and the draft is kind of controversial in every sport, so I don't really know how you go about fixing it. But we'll have to see how it is solved and if it even happens. And, you know, the competition committee can tweak it, so maybe it's different than how we've heard it's going to be now. But who really knows? It'll be cool to see.
Yeah, it will be just because it's going to affect the Pacers a ton this year because
– Well, Woj did say they don't think it would be in effect for the next draft, but maybe the one after that.
Okay, because, I mean, Pacers – if you're a Pacers fan there, you're hoping maybe the Pacers have one bad year. So they have one bad year where they maybe get a top three pick this year, and then they build around Turner and that pick for the future. That's kind
of – And Depot, yep.
Yeah, and Depot, yes. That's the thought. So.
I love how Depot's already an afterthought. He might be the best or second best player on the team. But
yeah, I know. He's, you know, maybe I am not an IU grad like you, so my ties to Olin Depot are less, you know, fandom and more just I've watched him play and he's been just an average NBA player.
Yeah, I understand. And maybe he'll continue to be one. I wrote about him in a salary series this week. You guys can check it out. But I basically said – as his usage goes up, you know, maybe his efficiency will go up and he'll be worth $21 million instead of being a $15 million player making $21 million. Who knows?
Yeah, that was a great series. I read at least the Ben Moore one. I was a little bit. I didn't go too deep, and I wasn't interested in Ben Moore. But the Olin Depot one was really good. The Tito Leaf one I liked. I mean,
I'm knocking out some of the boringer players first, who like like Ben Moore is, might not make the team, and like Oladipo is the same contract for 4 years, so it's easy. With him, Oladipo, I wrote more about how you're hoping that the future value makes the present value worth it. So like this year, he's probably like a $15 million player making $21 million, but you hope he grows into like a $25 million player making $21 million. So you're kind of betting on him with that.
Yeah, Oladipo is part of that, got overpaid because people thought that the cap was going to skyrocket, and then it didn't. But he's not like extremely overpaid. He's just kind of overpaid. He's right. Probably a $17 million player, not a 21.
Exactly. And you kind of need that guy as the Pacers, like someone who can actually score. So it's fine. It's fine.
What else are you writing?
It is what it is.
Do you write anything for Indy Sports this week?
Keeping the salary series alive. I'll probably do a Darren Collison film breakdown just because I want to write about Darren Collison. And I'm going to write about DeMar DeRozan for NBA Math. That'll be very fun. You should check that one out.
The $30 million man, right?
The $30 million man. But that's not going to be about a salary. That's going to be more about how he's been so polarizing recently.
Okay. I'm not a big fan of him, but this is a Pacer podcast, so we can't discuss DeMar DeRozan.
I will not reveal my stance on him, but you should read it. It'll be good.
I will tweet out once you write your article. I'll read it, and I will either agree with you or disagree with you on Twitter, and it'll be some more debate.
What are you writing about this week?
So I wrote a Paul George's saga ending thing, little timeline, kind of supposed to be kind of comical a little bit, just laughing about the whole situation the past 3 years it's been with Paul George. Oh, that last week. This week, like I said, we're in the dog days of summer still, so I'm going week by week. I don't go in. I usually write Thursday night to post Friday. Usually I've been doing that, about writing once a week right now in the off season. I'll probably think up an idea sometime later this week. I kind of want to go into a huge Lance dive, but we also done that a couple times on the Indy Corner site already. Caitlin Cooper has been doing some Lance stuff, so we'll see what I pick. Maybe some news will break this week. I'll have to write about that. I'd like to do a lottery reform one if they make the rules sometime soon. So
that would be fun.
We'll see. Just because the lottery is going to affect the Pacers this year, because they are going to be in the lottery, and they're probably one of the worst 8 teams in the league.
Maybe I'll go back to Pacers draft picks in light of the lottery thing. That'd be fun.
Yeah. I mean, in offseason, it's always a good time to write some kind of historical pieces and more like, you know,
off the wall stuff.
Yeah, fun stuff. More fun articles, because you don't have to worry about writing about what's going on day to day, or just kind of writing about what people might want to read while they're sitting on, while they're on their phone, because it's not, you know, the NFL started, so people are getting attracted by that. But there are people like us who are NBA junkies who like football, but would much rather watch basketball and read about basketball than watch football.
I wouldn't say I like football, but I don't dislike football.
I like the Colts. I don't really, I mean, I like football.
We're clearly out of Pacers stuff if we're talking about football. So, as always, the presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast is SeatGeek. Use the code LONBA on the SeatGeek app or website to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I'm Tony. I've been here with Adam again. We'll see you guys next week.